We talked a little Georgia yesterday, but let's talk some more Georgia football this morning once again.
Yeah, and SEC, as someone that's really been, as I said, throughout the landscape of college football in his career as a beat writer. But right now he's with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and Dog Nation. He's joined us on several occasions on Talking Ball and, of course, on The Drive here at ESPN 97.7 The Zone. And that's our good friend Mike Griffith, who is now with us on the Neighbors Wealth Management Hotline. Mike, hope you're staying safe. You're with Drew and Scott in Huntsville. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you.
Yes, sir. Good to have you. I guess first, your thoughts on JT Daniels being immediately eligible. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. It's interesting because of now the dynamic in the quarterback room for Georgia. They've gone – it's really changed quite a bit in the last 6-7 months.
Well, yeah. You know, when Justin Fields kind of split on him after 1 year.
Right.
You know, it didn't leave much depth. It kind of took the run out of the RPO for Jake Brown. I think everybody in the stadium knew Jake wasn't going to keep it because they didn't really have a backup quarterback. Justin Bennett was a former walk-on who had 1 year of junior college experience, came back to Georgia. So, you know, Georgia really couldn't risk Jake Fromm. It really affected their offense and really affected the threat of Jake keeping it on that RPO. And I thought it really damaged the Georgia offense. But as far as JT getting eligible, I don't think that was a surprise to anybody that looked at his game. I mean, the kid, you know, he got injured the second quarter of the first game of the season. So, I mean, he pretty much missed the entire season. So, you know, that being the case, the same, you know, coaching staff had changed from the ones that recruited him, you know, going traveling across the country from, you know, a little bit different area in Southern California, what they were dealing with the pandemic at the time he left. I mean, it's just, it was a textbook. He got his paperwork in early. Textbook example for the NCAA to grant the waiver. And they go on a case-by-case basis. But I thought JT had a pretty solid case. And obviously they knew that. I don't think they would have, you know, traveled across the country to transfer to Georgia without a year.
Well, it does start his clock now at Georgia, and it does put him in a quarterback battle with another transfer in the same quarterback room. So how do you see all of this kind of playing out?
Well, I mean, the strong survive. You know, I think Jamie Newman's the guy. I don't think there's – you know, I think Kirby made that pretty clear a couple weeks ago. He did an interview on ESPN. He talked about Jamie Newman's leadership and how Jamie had applied himself and how good Jamie looks physically. There's some videos out there. You can see Jamie throwing the ball. You can look at the PFF metrics and see that, you know, according to some people, he's the third or fourth best quarterback in the nation coming back. And we just didn't know a lot about him in the Wake Forest offense. And, you know, and then when he did kind of get under the scope, you know, he was missing two out of his top three receivers the last four or five games of the year, and the offense changed. I don't think they threw the ball more than 30 times in any of those games. They started trying to run the ball more because they were missing two of their top three receivers at Wake and didn't have the sort of depth that some of these other top programs do. So, you know, I think Jamie's probably at the head of the class. But I'll tell you, Dwan Mathis is having a great offseason. I mean, that's the name the players are throwing out there, and I've heard a buzz. And Dwan was going to be the Ohio State quarterback before Justin Fields transferred. When Justin Fields transferred to Ohio State, that's when Dwan Mathis flipped.
Yeah.
And Ohio State didn't tell Dwan that they were recruiting Justin. In fact, they told him they weren't. He had to find out through Twitter that Justin Fields was talking to Dwayne Haskins. So, you know, Dwan's had a great offseason. You mentioned JT coming in here now, coming off that knee. And then Carson Beck was like Mr. Football, won a Class 8A championship down there in Florida. I mean, this guy can play too. So it is a lot different. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of talent. And the question is, you know, if somebody's going to transfer.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see. There's definitely some talented guys there. It's interesting. When we talked to Anthony Dasher, I know you know him very well, he agreed with you. He thinks Jamie Newman will still be the guy. And as you pointed out, with Jamie Newman's athleticism, the RPO will be back in as a threat for UGA. And that's one of the things I want to see. We didn't get to see spring practice, so the changes that Todd Monken may bring to this offense, I'm anxious to see.
Yeah, well, they got to figure out their skill position hierarchy. You know, I mean, we know it's going to be throw the ball to George Pickens. I mean, this guy's, you know, we're going to see him. He's going to be on your fantasy football roster 2 or 3 years if he stays between the lines, right? You know, you got to find out about Zamir White, and I thought he looked okay, maybe good, and in the Sugar Bowl against Baylor, but I didn't think he looked great. I didn't think he looked like he was next to fall in line after, you know, Chubb, Michelle, and Swift. He didn't look like a first round pick to me. Now, he'll be 2 seasons removed from the knee injury, so we'll see what Zamir can do. I can tell you, he looks incredible. I mean, physically, he just looks incredible. But there's so much more to running the football than lifting weights and doing workouts. So we'll see if Zamir's got his instincts and his vision back. I saw a little bit of wiggle against Baylor, not a lot. but a little bit. He's a powerful guy with a forward lean. Just not sure about the vision and ability to catch the football. Kenny McIntosh could be the all-around guy. He could be the steal.
Wow.
If his breakaway potential, you know, I think he had the longest run of the season for Georgia last year. And if he's got that breakaway speed, Kenny's the guy that can catch the ball. He's got wiggle. He's got hips. He's got vision. He's got a big brother who plays NFL. Another brother was at Notre Dame and Washington State as a running back. I mean, Kenny is a talent out of South Florida there. It'll be interesting to see if he's the guy. And then, you know, they got Kendall Milton. You know, he was a really special recruit out of Fresno, California. Another one of these big, physical, fast guys. Haven't seen what he can do against competition yet. You know, Fresno's not Metro Atlanta. It's not South Florida. You know, let's see what he does when Monty Rice, lays the pads to him in practice. So there's talent there. James Cook, maybe a third down kind of guy like you saw Swift his freshman year. You know, big brother Dalvin in the NFL. And James looks like he's put on some size. And he's got breakaway speed. Teammates talk a lot about him. Really underutilized, I thought, the first 2 years. Don't know how he practiced, though. But if he shows up and is accountable, Kirby said some good things about him. He's another potential breakout guy.
Well, Mike, where are we at? Where's your feeling at right now? Where do we stand on college football?
Well, I think it's become political. You know, I don't even think it's about.
Amen, sir.
Yeah. I don't think it's become common. I don't think it's about common sense anymore. You know what we hear, because we're only hearing half the argument. We're only hearing half the discussion, and I don't know who to blame. I mean, I don't know where to place blame. I mean, reporters report what they hear. They got different people leaking. The people leaking, some of them don't want there to be football for whatever reason. But nobody talks about the unintended consequences if there's not football. Everybody says, well, what if you play football and a guy gets COVID-19 playing football? Well, what if you don't play football and a guy gets COVID-19? Well, let me tell you what happens if you don't play football and a guy gets COVID-19. He's probably not going to be diagnosed as quickly because he doesn't have access to 24/7 medical. He's probably not going to have access to the same treatment that he would if he was going to a football building and eating the diet every day. He's probably going to have more exposure to people who have COVID-19 if there's not a football season, because 90% of his time when he's on the football team is in the football building. And if he's not in the football building and on the football team, he's going to be at the grocery store, the gas station, the fast food restaurant, just like you and me. We don't know who sneezed on that gallon of milk before we picked it up. So let's talk about the consequences if there's not college football. Let's talk about, people not being in college. Let's talk about opportunities being taken away, some careers being derailed, some guys maybe doing some things they wouldn't normally do if they were playing football. There's a lot of unintended consequences if there's not football, and nobody's talking about it. And it's flawed logic. People want to pretend, and I don't know, when I say people, it's a very general statement, and I'll keep it general because I don't want to upset anybody. But people want to pretend that if there's not football, that these players all go in a vacuum and everybody's safe.
Exactly.
It's quite the opposite.
No. Yeah. Amen. Well, I saw something the other day that, 20% of the guys, I mean, your big-time guys, the ones that are projected in the draft, if this keeps dragging along, they're just ready to say goodbye and sign with an agent and be done.
Well, however that works out, my point is they're not safer if there's not football.
Regardless, yeah. Yes.
That's the point of this. The hard sell we're getting, and it's absolutely incorrect, and I really wish Greg Sankey would open up and say this, and I understand he doesn't want to leave himself open to political attacks, but what nobody's saying is that college football players are more at risk for COVID-19 if there's not a college football season. That's what nobody's going to come out and say. They're going to pretend, and it's just fact, because they're going to funnel back into society. And all you need to do is look at the trends right now. All you need to do is look at the first 5 months. Guess what? Jim Harbaugh said it best. There's been COVID-19 without football. There's going to be COVID-19 with a football season and probably some COVID-19 after. And here's the thing, the concept, well, let's just wait. Let's just wait for a vaccine. Okay, you ever seen Something About Mary? How about COVID-20? How about COVID-21? We have got to get to a place in our society where we recognize that the best that we can do right now is, as Kirby Smart says, get comfortable being uncomfortable. Now, Kirby didn't apply that to COVID-19. I want to make that clear.
Yes.
But that's one of his things about dealing with adversity. And as a society, and as somebody that served in the military, I can tell you, when we planned our missions, and thank goodness I didn't have to go in wartime, but we didn't talk about what happened if the parachute didn't open, okay? We talked about how we were going to overcome these things and what we were going to do when we landed and deployed, all right? And that's what we've got to do as a society right now. We've got to talk about how are we going to overcome this instead of coming up with reasons why we should all stop staying in our house and not live life.
And, Mike, if they do play, what are your thoughts on a conference-only schedule, maybe 10 games in a 13-week period?
You know, they got to do what they got to do. You know, if you're going to move forward, like I said, if you're going to move forward, they've got a responsibility to do everything they can to protect the student-athlete. Now, I don't know as far as taking out conference games. I do know this. If the SEC is going to tell me that they're going to do everything they can in the best interest of the student-athletes, the schools, and the parents, then let's just take advantage of this little blip that we have in history, okay? Right now, we've got this strange, peculiar year where things aren't going to be quite normal. To me, this is an opportunity to grow. This presents an opportunity to make some tweaks and some changes. And let me tell you where I would start. I would start with a topic that the late, great Pat Dye discussed with me, and that is to move Auburn to the East Division and Missouri to the West Division.
Yes.
Now is the time to do that. Why? Because travel is hard on schools. It presents more complications, and it's absolutely ridiculous. It makes absolutely no sense that Missouri is in the East Division and Auburn is in the West. And don't tell me about tradition, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of traditions that have outgrown themselves. And it's just dumb. At this point, it's just dumb. So you've got a season where you want to minimize travel. And forget about football, because those guys get on the private jets and fly and have the buses. I'm talking about the non-revenue sports that are in the little vans that are driving to the moon. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the volleyball, the soccer, and the non-revenue. Get Missouri where they belong. And one other thing, let's just go ahead and go to a 9-game conference schedule, because then you can protect that Alabama-Auburn rivalry. You can say, okay, they're still going to play every year. You're going to have two permanent opponents in one rotation, or maybe you drop one of the rotations. I don't know. But to me, this is a year for the SEC to fix something that is long overdue and get this conference geographically aligned and make it a little bit easier on these parents and on these players and these schools to minimize their, you know, taking less money in the budget to when you don't have to travel that far, not as hard on the kids when they don't have to travel that hard. Let's just fix it. Let's, you know, Pat Dye would, you know, somewhere above, he'd be smiling down on us and would love this conversation, because he'd been saying this and nobody wanted to listen to him. And now it's really time they have an opportunity to fix that.
Mike Griffith joining us on the Neighbors Wealth Management Hotline here on Talking Ball this morning. You brought up Mike Slive. Mike, I'm curious just to get your thoughts on how he's kind of navigated the SEC through this.
Well, you mean Greg Sankey.
Yeah, I mean Greg Sankey, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Greg's hands are somewhat tied. You know, to be fair to Greg, you know, Greg's job is to where he essentially, you know, works for, you know, is there advises the league presidents and the league athletic directors. But there's other factors involved here. And the biggest factor to me is ESPN. And, you know, ESPN is the rights holder for the conference. And, you know, he's got a lot of different people to answer to. I mean, Greg's that guy that's got to try to please everybody. He's got to please his ADs. He's got to please the presidents. He's got to work with ESPN. He's got to work with the other, at least we thought he was working with the other Autonomy 5 commissioners before the Big Ten and the Pac-12 went rogue and just blindsided everybody with that premature decision last week. I mean, my goodness, I mean,
yeah.
What a splintering of college football. How bad do we need a leader right now? And I'm sorry, but Mark Amert's not that guy. You know, how bad do we need a leader in NCAA right now that can rally and oversee a czar? Because what's happening is college football is becoming splintered again. It took the great Roy Kramer to bring everybody together back in, you know, a little history lesson for you younger people out there. Up until 1998, we didn't have a unified national title because the Big Ten and the Pac-10, then the Pac-10, wanted to play their Rose Bowl. That was more important than the national. So we had this, you know, masquerade of Michigan as a split national champion in 97 when they would have gotten their asses plowed by Nebraska had that game ever happened. But instead, they go to the Rose Bowl. They don't have to face this dominant Nebraska team. And so that's the last split national championship. So what Roy Kramer did was he said, hey, guys, let's do this BCS thing. And he got the computers involved because the Big Ten and Pac-10, they're saying, well, now, wait a minute. How do we know we're going to get a fair shake? Because you guys got this little deal here in the Sugar Bowl, and you got all these bowl deals, and you invite who you want. No, Kramer says, we're going to have these computers involved. So this is going to be a little – no, we're still going to have the polls involved. They're going to be that one human element. But we're going to have three computers involved, Anderson and Hester, New York Times, and Sagarin Ratings. They're all done a little bit differently. And so you can feel comfortable that this is going to be a fair and equitable system. So the B BCS goes on. They add some computers. They make it a little bit more complex. Some people squawk. There's 1 or 2 years out of, you know, I don't know, 20, you know, where you maybe make an argument. There was an undefeated Auburn team in there, maybe had a good argument. But, you know, they lost to USC head-to-head the year before, so maybe not. But so now all of a sudden we've taken a step back with this new college football playoff, where now you do have to worry about the politics. If you're Georgia, you do have to worry about the Georgia Tech AD being on the panel. You do have to worry about the Oklahoma AD being on the panel, and his team's one of the teams up for consideration. I mean, come on, man. You know, nobody's going to be happy with that. And I talked to Roy Kramer about it last summer, and he said that's why we went with the numbers. I wanted to take the regionalism out of it because we all know, guys, everybody has an inherent bias. Whether you want to or not, we're all a product of our society. We're all a product of our experiences, and they're all different. So we're all going to have a different filter and a different viewpoint, and the same is true of college football. So we really need that leader because I'm feeling like college football is getting ready to splinter again.
Well, great stuff from Mike Griffith. I completely agree with everything you said today. Absolutely unbelievable segment with the man that's covered Georgia. He's covered Alabama, Tennessee, Michigan State. Now with Dog Nation of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Auburn.
Yeah, and that's
Auburn.
Right. And Auburn as well. Yeah,
I was there for that 11-0 Terry Bowden team.
That's right. Yes, you were. Well, Mike, we appreciate the time. Let everybody know how they can connect with you. Just an outstanding stuff today.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at MikeGriffith32, and I'll post all my work there.
Sir, thank you. We really appreciate it. Stay safe, sir.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Wow.
What a segment.
That's
an all-timer. He hit on every point I've been making on this show. Thank you, Mike Griffith. Amen.
Right.
Stanky, listen to this guy. Don't ruin the sport, people. Listen to him, okay?
That interview brought to you by our good friends at University Kia. They want to see you in a Kia. Let's get to hour number two of Talking Ball.
Tough to top that.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to get any better than that, but we're going to try.
Hank South next, talking Bama recruiting.